to episode 29. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup and beginning with community health as it continues through a heavy bargaining year. Thanks to those members who were able to attend the recent monthly meeting that we had for community health, including the CEOs, and provided that valuable guidance in terms of responding to the union logs of claim. In terms of the various negotiations that are occurring, we have dates locked in for the number 4 branch, which is the branch that covers dietitians, psychologists and pharmacists. We have dates locked in with respect to the number 1 branch, the Health Workers Union, which covers health and allied staff, as well as managers and administrative staff. However, we do not yet have dates with regards to VAPA, who have declined to attend the schedule of meetings that we provided to them. We are yet to schedule ongoing meetings with respect to dentists and dental therapists, but this will occur shortly. With respect to health services, the major focus at the moment is with respect to bargaining for doctors. Those have shifted from meeting for half a day once a week to full days twice a week. Updates with respect to each of those meetings can be found on the VHAA app. That will be a way for you to have an idea as to what matters are being discussed between the parties and to make your contribution in the event that you have something that you want to add to that process. We would like to thank the reference group who have made themselves available to continue to provide us advice as we work through that process. With respect to our other agreements, we're currently going through the process of meeting with the various working groups. Most recently, we have met with the ANMF and had a further SDPPWG meeting with them, as well as the Health Workers Union. And just a reminder that summaries of all our meetings with unions, either for negotiations or for SDPPWGs or for any other working group, as well as all the meetings with our reference groups, are summarised and placed on the VHAA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion, fresh from his semi-final appearance on Australian Ninja Warrior, is Manager Workplace Relations Services, Tim Nagle. Welcome back, Tim.
It's good to be back, Stuart.
Tim, would you do the honours for the clue for this week's subject for discussion? So for the benefit of those people who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, would you be good enough to describe the object?
It's a doll of Mr. T.
And based on that particular object, what would you say is this week's subject for discussion?
I'm not sure.
That's a terrible answer, Tim. Let me tell you a story about a guy called Lawrence. Lawrence, who then changed his name to Mr. T. But before he was Mr. T, and before he was Clubber Lang or B.A. Baracus or any of the other characters that he inhabited, he was a nightclub bouncer. And it was Mr. T's job to determine who would gain entry into a nightclub. So this week's discussion, based on that clue, is right of entry.
Of course.
Right of entry is one of those subjects that comes up only occasionally, but when it does, it tends to come up with a degree of urgency. So notwithstanding that, generally speaking, both employers and unions handle right of entry extremely well in our sector, it's worth people being reminded as to what the provisions under the Act for right of entry are.
Where do we start?
So we start with some general categories with regards to right of entry. So broadly speaking, right of entry falls into three key categories. We're going to leave aside any discussion about outworkers and all that sort of stuff, but the three categories that we'll be focusing on are right of entry in order to investigate a suspected contravention, the right of entry to hold discussions, and right of entry associated with occupational health and safety.
So there's three different types of for entry. Are they identical or?
So the powers are different, and what a person can do under those particular rights of entry vary slightly. So we'll address each in turn.
So if we start with the right of entry to investigate a suspected contravention, what does that involve?
So that takes us to a sort of a dark and often unvisited part of the Act, Section 481. And what Section 481 provides is that a permit holder may enter a premises and exercise a right that are associated with the investigation of a suspected contravention of either the Act or a term of a Fair Work instrument, where that alleged contravention affects a member of the organisation represented by that permit holder.
So there's a number of different components to that definition. How about we start with what a permit holder is?
So one of the great things about the Fair Work Act is Section 12. Section 12 is a dictionary which defines a lot of the key terms relevant to the Act.
So does Section 12 define a permit holder?
It does, but in a fairly unhelpful fashion. It defines a permit holder as somebody who holds an entry permit.
So it's a little bit circular in a sense.
In effect, it means that in order to affect a right of entry, you must have a permit that entitles you to do so.
So who issues the permit? Is it the Commission or...?
It's the Commission. So the Commission determines who should be issued a right of entry permit.
So the Commission will be the person that issues the permit?
It does. So what the Commission... It must be satisfied that a person is a fit and proper person and the Commission may issue a permit. What's interesting about that expression is that it's an act of discretion as opposed to a requirement as such.
And... So it's dependent on the person being a fit and proper person.
And I think the thing to emphasise for members is that that's a determination made by the Commission. It's not something that is simply in the eye of the beholder. It may well be that employers from time to time have a very strong view as to what a fit and proper person should be, but it's a judgment that's made by the Commission.
So in the context of a contravention, what is the purpose of the entry?
So that the purpose of the entry has two elements. So we've talked about the fact that in order to have a right of entry, you must be a permit holder. The next element is that it's for the purpose of investigating a suspected breach of either the Act or a Fair Work instrument.
So can you give us an example of what a contravention might be of the Act?
An example of that would be an element of the National Employment Standards. Perhaps it's surrounding a request for a flexible work arrangement.
So what's meant by the reference to a Fair Work instrument?
Well, sadly, it's not a ukulele or a harmonica. It's in fact a reference to an instrument made under the Fair Work Act, such as a modern award or enterprise agreement. For the purpose of our members, overwhelmingly, it will be an enterprise agreement.
So if the union representative turns up at the workplace, do I have to just accept their assurances that they're there to investigate a suspected contravention?
So before a right of entry is exercised, it is generally preceded by a right of entry notice, which is given at least 24 hours before the proposed before the entry. Part of what's required is that the entry notice contain information about the suspected contravention.
Okay. Are there any exceptions to that rule to provide that notice?
Yeah, there is. There is a provision under the Act which enables the Commission to effectively waive that requirement.
And is there certain circumstances that lead to that exemption? Or?
Yeah, in effect, where the Fair Work Commission holds a view that giving advance notice might result in destruction or concealment or the alteration of evidence.
Are there any other requirements other than the permit holder giving notice?
So it's also a requirement that the suspected breach pertain or affect a member of the organisation that the permit holder represents.
So they have to have members within the organisation when...
Yeah. That's correct. And generally speaking, that's not contentious. It would be a rare circumstance where there was an issue as to whether or not a suspected breach impacted on a member of a permit holder's organisation.
So the question probably then comes up from employees about how would they know if a member of the union is affected?
Well generally speaking, that will simply not be contested. Yeah. And it will be accepted that in a workplace that there will be a member of the relevant union. It's rare that that connection is not obvious, but it is possible for a union to seek that matter be determined by the Commission if there is a matter of dispute there.
I guess it's going to be... becomes obvious depending on what the nature of the suspected contravention is.
Mostly that will be the case.
Yeah. What other details must an entry notice provide?
So one of the things that an entry notice must do is identify which power is being exercised. That is, whether it's the power to investigate a suspected contravention, whether it's the power to hold discussions, whether it's the safety provisions. It should also detail when the day the entry will occur, and the premises that are to be entered. It should identify the organisation of which the permit holder is an official, and it needs to also, for some purposes, include a declaration that the permit holder is entitled to represent the interests of a member who performs work at the premises.
There may be circumstances in which that right of entry is misused. Is there any sort of framework for dealing with those sort of circumstances?
So it's worth emphasising that the misuse of the right of entry is the exception to the rule. Yeah. Generally speaking, these things are done as a matter of straightforward procedure, but if in that unlikely event there was a misuse, the Commission has a range of powers to deal with the misuse of right of entry, and that includes the imposition of conditions, the suspension of the entry permit, which is, as we discussed before, a condition precedent to being able to exercise a right of entry, or potentially the revocation of a permit.
And we know that some members have actually sought the assistance of the Commission in the past to deal with those sort of issues.
Well, just in terms of the assistance of the Commission, I think it's worth emphasising the fact that if there are issues associated with right of entry, that the Commission has power to assist in those disputes. Mm. I think a lot of attention goes to the issue of trying to seek some penalties such as suspension or revocation, but really those are the most extreme cases. Where there is a disagreement about a right of entry, the Commission has power to conciliate, and that's probably the most effective way for all parties. Mm. To resolve a dispute about right of entry.
So what can a permit holder do once they enter to investigate a suspected contravention?
Well, the short answer is quite a lot. A person who has a right of entry to investigate a suspected contravention can inspect any work or process or object that is relevant that is to the suspected contravention, interview any person with regards to the suspected contravention, where that person agrees to be interviewed, and whose industrial interests the permit holder's organisation is entitled to represent. They can also require the occupier or the affected employer to allow for the inspection of and to make copies of any record or documents that are directly relevant to the suspected contravention that's either kept on the premises or accessible by computer, excluding non-member records.
So a permit holder can access documents?
They can, but there is a limit as to how those documents can be used. Specifically, a person who does obtain information or documents can't use or disclose that information in a way that is not related to that investigation.
So it's about relevance, isn't it, to the suspected contravention?
That's correct.
Mm. Are there any exceptions to that rule?
There are some exceptions. The exceptions go to circumstances where there is an imminent risk, either to the safety of an individual or to public safety, or the committing of a criminal offence. So those rules with regards to the limitations on the use of documents that arise from a right of entry to investigate a suspected contravention do have those exceptions in those somewhat heightened circumstances.
So what occurs if the documents that the union are after aren't readily accessible?
So what permit holders are entitled to do is issue a notice to produce documents within 5 days of the entry.
Okay, yeah. How about non-member records?
So the focus of the Act is really about, is primarily on accessing information relevant to a breach that impacts a member. The Commission, however, does have power upon application to make an order to permit the inspection of non-member records.
Oh, that's interesting. So we've talked about the right of entry to investigate a suspected contravention. How about the second scenario where the right of entry is to hold discussions with employees?
So this is the second of our three key areas. What the Act provides is that a permit holder may enter premises for the purpose of holding discussions with one or more employees who perform work on the premises, whose industrial instruments the permit holder's organisation is entitled to represent, and who wish to participate in those discussions. That is, employees cannot be forced to participate in discussions against their will.
And what are the obligations on the permit holder in those circumstances?
So it comes back really to the right of entry notice. We talked before that, generally speaking, there must be a right of entry notice given at least 24 hours prior to the entry, also not more than 14 days. The exception, of course, is where the Commission grants an exemption. It's also the case that if there is some sort of condition on the permit, that the person who is exercising that right must comply with the condition on their permit.
Is there anything else that would be relevant to that?
They need to produce their documents upon request and before making a request to access or obtain copies of documents. They need to provide copies of their or show their authority documents.
And when does that occur?
That occurs when they attend the site. The authority documents include the right of entry notice, which has already been provided, or the exemption certificate, which would occur on the spot, as well as the entry permit.
Mm. Are there any other requirements?
There are. Firstly, a permit holder must comply with a reasonable request to follow the on-site safety requirements. Which is really a requirement that would apply to any other visitor. I guess one of the most common examples would be a sign-in book, which organisations utilise in order to manage safety and risk and the like. If there is a dispute about what's reasonable in terms of those safety requirements, that can be addressed by the Commission.
I know one of the more controversial elements of the right of entry provisions is where those interviews or discussions occur.
Yeah, look, it's interesting. What the Act provides is that the location of the discussions is a place that's agreed between the employer and the union. However, if agreement's not reached, then there's a default proposition. And that default proposition is that it occurs in the place where one or more of the persons who are to be interviewed ordinarily take their meal break. That requirement was really the result of instances where some of the places that were identified as being suitable for interviews were far from suitable. Mm. And that's been the fix with regards to that. Generally speaking, there's not a dispute as to what an appropriate location is, and health services usually have meeting rooms that are available for that purpose. But if agreement can't be reached, it defaults effectively to the lunchroom.
Yeah. And can the employer determine the route the permit holder uses to get to that room?
Yeah, it can. But once again, it's underpinned by that notion of reasonableness. So you can require that a particular route be taken to that room, and there might be a range of reasons as to why that might occur, having regard to the impact on patients or residents or infection control or whatever the case may be. But again, it must be reasonable.
Are there any other limitations that the Act prescribes?
So a permit holder can't access an area that is primarily used for residential purposes. I think where that's relevant for our sector is in the context of residential aged care, where you've got people who are living in their home as part of a health service facility.
So that covers off the first two elements. The third one is where the permit holder is accessing a site to exercise a state occupational health and safety right.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one. Generally speaking, members will be aware that in the pecking order that Commonwealth legislation overrides state legislation. But the way the Fair Work Act operates is that it carves out some exceptions to that, including exceptions with regards to state occupational health and safety law. And effectively what the Act does, it permits the continued operation of that state regime for occupational health and safety issues, and allows it to continue to operate.
So the three are the three basis for exercising right of entry is the investigation of suspected contravention, to hold discussions, and also in relation to the state-based OH&S laws. So what does that involve?
So effectively, it's very similar to the other requirements, that is the issuing of the notice, identifying the issues, the 24 hours of notice. But effectively what they're required to do is to specify that that's the right they intend to exercise and the reason they propose to exercise that particular right.
And we talked a little bit about it earlier on, but what happens if there is, specifically what happens if there is a dispute about right of entry?
That's the issue that really goes to the Commission. And we would certainly encourage people to utilise that function. There are some very strict rules with regards to both unions and employers. And if parties are simply left to argue the toss between themselves, then either party runs the risk of falling foul of the requirements of the Act. So, for example, one of the things that a permit holder cannot do is hinder or obstruct any person or act in an improper manner. That's an extraordinarily broad requirement in terms of not acting in an improper manner. But similarly, an employer cannot obstruct or hinder a permit holder. A person, and let's be more direct, an employer cannot refuse entry to somebody who is validly exercising a right of entry. The Act also prohibits misrepresentations. That is, you can't assert that you have authority to do something if that's not so. And there are potential consequences for that. And as we talked before, there are there is a prohibition on the unauthorised use of documents. So there are a lot of requirements that exist, bearing in mind the significance of the right that's being exercised. So if there is a disagreement, I think it's far better for an early reference to the Commission for Conciliation to occur.
In the context of that referral to the Commission, can the Commission issue an order in respect to the dispute that's been notified?
It can do, but what I would say is that that conciliation function, I think, is extraordinarily useful. I think it's in the interests of both unions and employers to take on board whatever it is the Commission has to say in that conciliation setting as a way of resolving that dispute.
Okay, so that's very useful. What other tips would you give members in relation to right of entry?
The first thing I would say is that members should always remember that the right of entry provisions form part of a framework. And that framework is intended to support and ensure compliance with industrial instruments and requirements under the Act. It's intended to encourage the ability of unions to connect with members and potential members. It's also intended to encourage and support a safe workplace. Those three objectives are extraordinarily important objectives and should be shared objectives. So it's worth bearing in mind what the purpose of that of these provisions are in terms of navigating your way through a response to a particular right of entry issue.
Thanks, Stuart. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, there's just one other thing I would add. I think what members should bear in mind is that the right of entry provisions go to the circumstance where a union is absolutely entitled, without consent, to enter a workplace. It's not the only reason that a union might attend a workplace. And, for example, there will be frequent circumstances where unions attend by agreement, by consent. We have enterprise agreements that make clear that unions are entitled to attend for certain reasons. For example, for orientation. Unions are entitled to attend for any process under the agreement, which could include consultation or dispute settlement or a disciplinary procedure as such. So whilst a right of entry is about when a union can absolutely attend and despite whether the employer wants them to or not, there are a multitude of other circumstances that are separate and distinct where a union will be on site. It's not, a right of entry is not the only circumstance under which a union is entitled to attend a workplace, and I think that's a very important point to emphasise.
It would be hard to have a consultation process in the absence of the union.
Oh, indeed, I pity the fool who attempts to engage in a consultation process without the participation of a union.
Well, that's very useful. Thank you, Stuart, for your time.
Thank you, Tim, and thank you, Mr. Tech.